In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God. Amen. The Gospel of today is from Matthew, and it tells us about how the Pharisees and scribes told the Lord Jesus that when he cast out demons, he did so by Beelzebub. And we'll continue our discussion today about what we began last week, about the lost art of forming meaningful friendships, and we'll see how we can categorize these Pharisees as in terms of their relation to Christ. So just to review what we spoke about quickly last week, we spoke about their different types of relationships. We said we had the immediate family relations, we had the intimate friends, or we had the extended family, and we also had the acquaintances, the things people we just deal with on a every day at work kind of thing, high by, very superficial. We also spoke about what true friends are, and we said true friends love at all times, as Proverbs says. And a true friend is somebody we can feel comfortable with our vulnerabilities. Of course, we spoke about the great need for friends, because we said their survey told us that there are only 25% of people in America were satisfied with their friends. We spoke about the greatest threat to our friendships. We spoke of two things. The first, we said that it was just the busyness of life. Things, you know, just pile up. We're going from one objective to another. We're going from one task to another. And we don't spend enough quality time with our friends, with our close friends. Also, the invasion of social media, we spoke about how this can also threaten our intimate friendships. Then we spoke about how do we build intimate friendships or true friendships. And I said the key was face-to-face interaction. Nothing can match face-to-face interaction. We see each other face-to-face. And the second is that we need to learn to trust one another, even with our vulnerabilities. Today, God willing, I'll speak about three points, particularly what most people want in friendships. What is it that people want in friendships? And two, about what are some potentially toxic friendships or friends. And now when I speak about these two points, maybe we can look to maybe our friends, we can assess our friends, but also we can assess myself. Do I fit in these categories as being a friend maybe who's toxic to somebody else? And if so, let's reevaluate our life and make the necessary changes. And lastly, we'll speak about maybe how to unfriend somebody. You know, on Facebook, it's very, I don't have Facebook, but I hear that you gather all these friends, and if somebody is troubling to you, there's just a button that you can click and say unfriend, and then they disappear. So we'll talk about this at the end of maybe how to unfriend somebody or how to sever a relationship with them. So what do most people want in real friendships? What do most people want? Proverbs, again, we'll quote the same verse from last week. It says, a friend loves at all times, but a brother is born for adversity. I think one of the greatest things that people seek in true friendship is loyalty. People want loyal friends. People want friends to be consistent, regardless of my circumstance. They want people that will still accept them and still be their friend, despite maybe their move from riches to rags, or maybe based on their looks. You know, I won't be your friend, you know, based because of, you know, how you dress or how you look, or if you gained weight or lost weight, of their status. I can't be your friend because I am of a higher social status and you are maybe of a lower social status, so I can't be your friends. Maybe I can't be your friend because I'm popular and you're not. Although I like you and I like some of, you know, your qualities, but because you're not popular, I can't be your friend. Maybe our occupation. I'm in a particular field and you're in another. So people are desiring people to be friends with that are consistent. This person will be my friend and will love me regardless of the circumstance maybe that I encounter in my life. Quoting that same report from last week, the Lifeboat report, it said that 81% of people said loyalty is the most important characteristic in a friendship. So loyalty is the first thing that people look for in friends. The second is honesty. People want friends that are honest. It says in Proverbs, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. It seems kind of counterintuitive. You know, a friend is not supposed to hurt you, is not supposed to wound you. But it says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, because a friend will tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. Of course, the way that you say it is another topic we can discuss about later. But a friend will tell you the things that you need to hear, even if it hurts you. And actually, you know, even if it hurts, but at least this is something that will be for your benefit. So a friend is truly looking out for the benefit of somebody else, for their growth and edification, not to put them down, not to make them feel inferior, but to help build them up. You know, listen, you know, James, I know that, you know, you like doing this, this, and this, but, you know, doing this, going to this place is really not the best thing for you or for me. You know, the dangers are this, this, and this, and this. And I know people that went down this road and it led to something that wasn't very pleasant. So I'm just telling you as a friend, you know, just watch out. So you're telling them something that they need to hear, not just they want to hear. A person, a friend that just tells you, you know, what you want to hear is just puffing you up and just, you know, wanting to get your approval. And actually, the Proverbs warns us of these kind of friends. They says, Solomon says, a man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. So if I just spread flattery, just, you know, tell people what they want to hear, I spread a net for their feet so they can trip. So true friends want honesty. Last, but just a word of warning here in terms of honesty, I can't meet somebody for the first time and say he's my friend and then say, you know what, I love you, but I don't like what you're doing. Then they're going to be like, okay, we're not really friends yet. So there has to be that relationship, a true, deep friend, not an acquaintance. Lastly, there are many, of course, characteristics, but lastly I'll mention is sensitivity. People want friends that are sensitive to their feelings. People want friends that can empathize with how they feel in different circumstances. Oftentimes what we run into is we end up criticizing our friends and then we try to brush it under the rug and brush it off and say, oh, you know what, I was just kidding. I didn't mean it. Sometimes we might make fun of people's physical characteristics or particular behaviors. We'll make fun of people that have, lost or gained weight. We'll make fun of maybe somebody's hairstyle. And without realizing maybe how this might affect a person. We might make fun of a person that eats a particular type of food. Or we might make fun of a person who's not very talented at sports. Or who's not very good in school. We might make fun of these things and not realize that this is a sore part in a person's life. This is, you know, the wound that is still open. And then when I make fun of him, although they might be smiling on the outside because they don't want to embarrass you, but it's actually touching a soft spot. So people want friends that are sensitive. And Proverbs also tells us again, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. So the person who throw these things out are like firebrands, are like arrows and death, because we can really hurt our friends when we say these things. So true friends want people that are sensitive to how I feel. And if you're not sure how they feel, ask them. So what about these potentially toxic friends? Who are these potentially toxic friends? And am I a toxic friend to my neighbors? The first type of toxic friend is the chronic complainer. And these people find fault in everything and anything. They'll find something to complain about. I get a 99 on an exam, they say, oh, you didn't get 100. They find something to complain about. Nothing is ever good enough. And it seems that their criticism is never constructive, but always destructive. They might criticize you, or I might criticize somebody else, and then they might ask, so how do you propose that I make it better? I don't know. So this is just, you know, you're criticizing just to destroy, or you're criticizing to construct. So you'll find that oftentimes their criticism is just for destruction and not construction. Also, we have to remember that St. Paul tells the Philippians, he says, do all things without complaining. So be a friend without complaining. Search for friends, maybe, that aren't always complaining and criticizing and negative, because eventually, you know, you will pick up these same habits. You'll begin to look at, you know, people and complain about them and grumble about them. And this is actually very common in the family. You'll find the father or the mother that's a chronic complainer. The children come out complaining the same exact way. Also, sometimes these chronic complainers can be consumed with self-pity. Some people complain because they want people to pity them. They feel like, you know, my condition is always, you know, the worst. Or I feel very unappreciated, so I complain so I can get this, you know, attention from others. And actually, Sirach warns us of this as well. He says, a fool will say, I have no friends, and I get no thanks for my good deeds. So again, this is a person who is a chronic complainer. Also, you have the friend who is a controller. The friend who is a controller. And this is the overbearing person, the person that forces their way or opinion in every situation. We'll be sitting together as friends, and it's always this person's opinion that has to be the last heard, or the one that has to be the one that we do. Like, if we're trying to decide where to go to eat or go, you know, what to do, it's always this person who has to make the decision. And if they're not making the decision, then, you know, it's not a pleasant, you know, sitting with the friends. And sometimes these might start with these petty things, with where to eat, what to do. It might start petty. But eventually, sometimes these controlling friends can even determine some major decisions. Maybe some major decisions of where I go to college, where I study. A friend, if I'm used to always satisfying a particular friend, and he's going maybe to UT, or he's going to a school in Corpus Christi, and I don't really interested in, you know, particular school down there, or they don't have a strong program, the one that I'm applying for. But my friend says, no, come, we'll have good time together. And they begin to influence us and try to convince us to go there, just for the sake of controlling, wanting his, you know, own, he has his own agenda, he wants that fulfilled. And sometimes people are controlling, they have good intentions, but unfortunately, they're still controlling. And this we'll see even sometimes in the family, not just with friends, but in the family. You'll find maybe a parent telling their child who's in, you know, graduated college where to go, how to spend their money, and where to live. Or you'll find a parent maybe of somebody who's already married. You know, my son or daughter has, you know, their own family, and I want to determine where they live, what they, you know, do, where they go on vacation, make them feel guilty if they don't, you know, fulfill everything that I have. So these are people that are controlling. Also have the tempter, the person who is tempting, the friend who tempts me. And this, I think, is the most destructive. So the tempter will encourage you to do things you know you shouldn't, and or things you normally wouldn't do without their company. And this can be many sorts, and I think all of us have experienced this. This could be the tempter, the one who flirts. And now flirting is not only for the girls, but also for the guys. So does a particular friend that I have flirt with me when I'm around? Then I need to be cautious. This can be a potentially toxic friendship. Do I myself, am I a friend that flirts? If I am, why? What is deficient in my life that I feel like I need it? Am I spending so much time adorning the outside, and then when people don't comment how I look, I get upset, so then I flirt so people can recognize the effort that I'm putting and making my hair, putting on makeup, and all these things? Why am I flirting? the smoker, you know, the person who, you know, tries to entice us, you know, to smoke or do drugs, or the person who might be living for material gain, and they try to tempt us to do the same. Although we may not be financially where this person is, but because he's tempting me, and he's, you know, he gets the latest and greatest gadget, you know, and he makes me, you know, desire the same thing, and he tempts me to go get the same thing, knowing that when I go do it and get it, then it's going to put me in debt. But yet he still, or she still, still tempts me. So this is the tempter. Also, we have the competitor. The competitor. And this is the person who's always comparing. Oh, what did you get on your tests? Oh, I got this. Oh, where did you get that dress? Oh, yeah. Where did you get, you know, those shoes? You know, where did you get this, you know, baseball card? Or where did you get, you know, whatever it is. It's the person who's always comparing themselves. Whether it be they compare friends, they compare possessions, grades, success, the amount of zeros in the bank. When we compare, this always fosters a sense of division. And never fosters growth when we compare ourselves with one another. So comparing ourselves with one another is possibly a toxic friend. Am I this type of person? Do I have friends that always compare themselves to me? And when they do compare themselves, does it make me feel bad about myself? Does it put me down? These can potentially be toxic. And actually, this was one of the major problems with the church in Corinth. You know, the church in Corinth had many divisions. They said, some of them said, oh, I am of Paul, I am of Apollos, I am of Cephas, and I am of Christ. So all of them had their own little cliques, and they were divided against each other. And they were comparing each other with each other. And St. Paul warned them that this is not the spirit of Christianity. That Christianity is not divided. Because if there is a house that is divided against itself, it cannot stand. Exactly what Christ said today in the gospel. So these are competitors. So just to recap, we said some of the toxic friends, whether it's me or others around me, are the complainers, the chronic complainers, the controller, the tempter, the competitor. Lastly, how do I unfriend somebody? How do I maybe hit the unfriend button or sever a relationship with a friend? Now, this is something that is extremely difficult. And it's, you know, it's something that is no, you know, clear way to do it. You do A, B, C, and D. But before I speak about maybe unfriending somebody or severing relationships, it's important to realize that it is extremely difficult to live a righteous life with the wrong friends. It's extremely difficult to live a righteous life with the wrong friends in my life. If I want to live a righteous life and I have those friends that are pulling me down and keeping me from living righteously, you will never live righteously. You can't. You are who your friends are, as the saying says. St. Paul warns us when he says, "Do not be deceived, for evil company corrupts good habits." Evil company corrupts good habits. Some people might say, you know what, but I'm strong. I'm the influential person in the group, and I can go to this place, or I can be with this girl or this guy and have a close relationship with them and not be affected by it. I can go maybe to the casino and only play with a $10 bill that I have in my pocket. So St. Paul here is saying, he begins the verse by saying, you know, before he says evil company corrupts good habits, he says, do not be deceived. Do not deceive yourself. Just be honest with yourself. I know my weaknesses. I know if I go to the casino, yes, I might have $10 in my pocket that I show my wife. I'm going only with $10, but the credit card's hidden in my other pocket. So he says, do not deceive yourself. You know that I have the problem with looking maybe at bad images online. So don't put yourself in a vulnerable relationship with a girl or with a guy. This is my weakness, flee from these situations. Has you ever thought about why the reverse of this or the inverse of this is isn't true? We say, St. Paul says that evil company corrupts good habits. Why don't good habits correct evil company? Why don't good habits correct evil company? This is sometimes many people will say this. They'll justify going to the club or going with these, you know, people or, you know, that have bad behaviors and say, Christ told us to be the light of the world. I'm going to be with them and I'm going to influence them with good. I would say 9.9 times out of 10, this is a failure. Why? It's just like, you know, if you look at like maybe these steps, right? If somebody was gonna try to be on the bottom of the steps here, and I tried to pull them up and they tried to pull me down, who's got the upper hand? The person on the bottom, right? Why? Gravity. They have gravity on their side, right? So there's this natural, you know, physical phenomenon dragging us to the ground. Same thing with sin. Our nature is corrupt. The humanity is corrupt. The natural inclination of man is to corruption, into sin. So if we know we have this tendency to go down, then, you know, this is why we can't say that I'm just going to affect everybody else. You know, there's always this natural tendency to be drawn, you know, to sin. And that's why it's always, we preach this all the time, swimming against the current. You know, if you're going with the current, you're going the wrong way. But it's always harder to swim against the current. It's always harder if your friends are doing one thing that is wrong, listening to bad music, you know, saying bad language, going to bad places. It's very hard to go against this current. But that's usually against the current is usually the right way. So how do we reconcile then about when Christ said, you know, you're the light of the world? Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. How do you reconcile Matthew 5:14? Again, there's no clear-cut, you know, way to say this is when you're the light of the world and this is when, you know, you flee. But it's more of like a balance. It's fluid. If you look at the picture there on the screen, it's the picture of a balance. And I like to say that life is kind of like a balance. Anybody that knows anything about measuring things like this, the most important thing about a balance is that it's calibrated. Is that when there's nothing on it, it's sitting at zero. And I think this caliber is our core relationship with our friends. Whenever our core relationship with our friends is healthy, then we're able to balance between the things that I can be the light of the world and the things where I need to flee. But if this balance is skewed one way or the other, based maybe on, you know, my family or my friends that influence me differently, then it becomes, you know, a little bit harder to distinguish between the two. So the center or the main point is our core relationships with others. And I put up there, if we can go to the next slide, it shows the levels of intimacy. So we spoke about many different relationships. The closest or the most intimate. We have the family, and then we have, you know, the close friends, and then we have maybe our acquaintances, and maybe we have strangers. So in the center of this is me. So God instructs us to love everybody. So from the core, going outside to everybody, whether they be family or strangers, we emit love to everybody. We show love and kindness to everybody. But how about coming in? These are the things that are influencing me. The people that influence me need to be those of my closest, you know, my closest circle. And that's why picking your close and real friends is so important, because they will influence you the most. Surround yourselves with people you want to become, not just anybody. So love goes out to everybody. We show love to the world, and this is how we're light to the world. But when it comes to me, people affecting me, and who my core is, then these are only the people of my close circle, my close friends, my family and my close friends. And the key here is, in order to show love to the whole world, this core needs to be good. This core needs to be solid. I need to have a solid, healthy relationship with my family and with my intimate friends. And you'll find people that have a problem with love in the family. Being loved in the family, have problems with their friends, have problems showing love to others because their core is, you know, unsettled. Having these levels of intimacy is normal. And this is something, you know, that Christ himself did. If you look at Christ, how he dealt with the Pharisees was one way. How he dealt with the multitude was another. He loved them, he provided for them, he taught them, he fed them, one way. Another level were like the 70 apostles. Oh, these are people who were working with him in the ministry and sharing the good news, one way. Another, even closer intimate, were the 12. The 12 disciples were the people he would basically find refuge in. Whenever I wanted to relax, I wanted to be with these people. But even among the 12, there was a closer-knit group. There was a group of three, Peter, James, and John, that he felt with. When he wanted to pray, he would take them with him. When he wanted to go and transfigure, he took them with him. So these were even closer intimate. And even closer than that was one. Who was that one? Saint John, the one who was next to him on the cross. Everybody else fled from him. But he's the one that stayed with him until the cross. And this is the one that Christ allowed him to put his head on his chest, because knowing he would be the one that would stay with me until the last breath. So having these intimate, you know, placing people in these intimate levels is normal. But this was something that Christ did for himself. He chose where to place these people. And as I said last week, this is for each and every one of us to do, to place people in these different intimate levels, knowing that the closest intimate friends are the ones who will influence me. Don't let your acquaintances and people that you say hi bye to, maybe the people that you only see exclusively at school or work, be the ones to influence you in your life. So what about this unfriending, you know, deal? So one thing we have to remember when we unfriend, or about friends in general, is we can't let our friends distract us from God's plan in our life. God has a plan for each and every one of you in your life, and it's to bring glory to his name. You know, I'm not saying God has a plan, you know, just for me to work in this place. God's plan is bigger than just working this place or going to school in this place. God's sending you to a certain area to either learn something or to be a tool in his hand, to minister to others, to show them something. So God has a plan for my life. Don't let anybody, you know, hinder this plan for your life. If you look at somebody like St. Paul, St. Paul, after he met Christ in the road to Damascus, was a different man. He made a 180-degree, you know, turn. And he knew that his mission was to spread Christianity to the world at that time. And this was his vision. So, but he had this guy, his friend, his name was Mark, or St. Mark, as we know him. He, you know, at one point in the beginning, he wasn't a very faithful, you know, companion to St. Paul. And you read this in the book of Acts, it says, "Now Barnabas was determined to take with them John called Mark, but Paul insisted that they should not take with them the one who had departed from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work." So apparently, he didn't go with them. And to St. Paul, this means that I can't bring him along. I love him and everything, but I can't bring him along. But then we realize later, when St. Paul spoke to Timothy, he says, "Get Mark, bring him with you, for he is useful to me for ministry." So what happened? He saw that St. Mark was now being active in the ministry. And he said, "Bring him back. Bring him back into my close, intimate friends, because he's useful to me with the ministry. This is where I'm going in my life. This is the plan that God has for me in my life. If you're joining me, you're going to be my intimate friend. But if you're hindering me, or maybe slowing me down, then maybe you go out one step. I still love you, you're still my friend, but you're just not an intimate friend." And mind you here, When St. Paul and Barnabas, they were looking at the same St. Mark. Barnabas looked at St. Mark and said, you know, I still see potential. I want him to be my intimate friend. And maybe certainly St. Mark, when he lived with St. Barnabas, he became encouraged. You know, St. Barnabas was known as the son of encouragement. So maybe St. Mark just needed to see or feel this encouragement, and that made him a better minister. So here, Barnabas chose to keep St. Mark and his close, intimate friend, and St. Paul decided to take him out. Neither of them was wrong or right. So the point here that I'm making, when you assess our friends, sometimes we need to redefine our friends. Sometimes we just need to redefine them. It doesn't necessarily mean we cut them off, but we just redefine where our friendship is and what I, you know, expect of our friendship. Basically, just setting boundaries for our friends. Sometimes, though, we have to cut the cord on our friends. We have to hit that unfriend button because this friendship is going nowhere and it's actually bringing me down. And actually, this we see in the life of Joseph. Joseph, when he found himself in Potiphar's house, he was a faithful servant. He was successful because God was with him. And then, as he moved up the ranks, he became the most trusted servant in Potiphar's house, and he entrusted everything to him. He was friends with everybody, but unfortunately, Potiphar's wife, you know, was maybe trying to be too close to him. It says in Genesis 39, "But it happened about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside. That she caught him by his garment and said, 'Lie with me,' but he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran aside." Scholars say that this was not the first move that she made. She didn't just, you know, plan this and say this was going to be the first time. Nor did they do they say that he was the only her only target. But maybe she tried this with many others. So here St. Paul says, "I'm friends with everybody." I mean, St. Joseph says, "I'm friends with everybody. I love everybody." But now when this person is being aggressive in terms of getting me to sin and to fall, then I sever the relationship. I hit unfriend. So friends that are, you know, aggressive in making us fall and stumble, then maybe we should consider hitting the unfriend button. And what did he do? He left his garments and fled. We don't hear about how he maybe cursed her and rebuked her or said, "Wait, maybe I'm the light. Maybe let me preach to her and say, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, you know. You know God says keza keza and this and this." He didn't say that. But he got up, he said, "Take my garment, I'm leaving. I don't care the cost." And he knew very well the cost was him maybe going in jail. And certainly this was what happened. But we never hear again when he was in jail, "Man, I should have never, you know, lost her friendship. I should have flirted with her a little bit. I should have done this." No, he didn't say any of that. He cut the cord and said, "I'm better without her friendship." In conclusion, put before us, you know, a couple of verses. First is Proverbs 13 to remind us of what we spoke about. "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." So he who walks with the wise will be wise. He who walks with the righteous will be righteous. And he who, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. So let's have or search and invest in real friendships that are key to our survival in this world that is trying to pull us down. Let's not let the busyness of life and social media strip us away from these beautiful friendships that we can build and nurture. And let's invest in our friends. Let's keep away from maybe the TV and the video games and invest more time in face-to-face interaction with our friends. Let's be loyal, honest, and sensitive friends to one another, keeping in mind that our core is the most important. Once our core between our family and our close, intimate friends is healthy, then by this we can assess, you know, other things with a balanced mind, and we can love everyone else. I'll finally leave you with a couple of verses from the Wisdom of Sirach for us to meditate on the rest of the day. This comes from the Wisdom of Sirach, chapter 6, from verse 14 to 17. It says, "A faithful friend is a strong shelter. He who finds one finds a treasure. There is nothing that can take the place of a faithful friend, and there is no way to measure his worth. A faithful friend is a medicine of life, and those who fear the Lord will find him. He who fears the Lord guides his friendship rightly, because he is, as he is, so also is his neighbor. And glory be to God forever and ever. Amen.